Hello and welcome to Our Dad's Died, the podcast of people whose dads are dead. This week we have Rhiannon Shaw on the podcast. She's a comedy writer, does character comedy and stand-up and has written for the BBC. She also has a dead dad. At one point I say this podcast is going to be 40 minutes long. It's about an hour long, but my God, it's a corker. It is funny. So if you're in the mood for some laughs while you grieve, let me tell you what, this is the episode for you. It does have some swearing, and that starts pretty much right away. Enjoy.
Well, welcome to the podcast, Rhiannon. Thanks so much for doing this.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
It's been a while in the making.
It has. Yeah. There've been various delays, both your side and ours, because we're busy people.
We're busy emotional people.
We're busy grieving. Sorry, guys, I'm busy grieving. What can I tell you?
Yeah, can we get a rain check on that?
No, but if there's any podcast that you can move due to grief, this is the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No one's going to question that here. We've all moved a podcast because we're too busy crying. I've done it. Tom's done it.
Yeah. It's true.
Yeah. Or occasionally ploughed ahead with a podcast that when we listen back, we shouldn't have done because...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody...
You thinking of the same one as me?
Yeah, I'm not naming names, but one of us was not emotionally prepared for the discussion.
Oh,
in
I wasn't ready,
question.
Was I? No. It was terrible.
No. Oh, jeez. I'm wondering if that's been released to the public.
It hasn't, and I don't think it ever will be.
Just an hour of crying.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, not far off. Significantly longer than an hour as well, I think. I think that was back in the days when we used to record for sometimes bordering on 3 hours, thinking we were Joe
During
Rogan.
During COVID, so just wanted something to do.
It was too much. It was too much for us. Yeah. And then you think, if we're not enjoying it, who on earth is going to listen to this?
Yeah, who is this for
some
at this point?
Some sick bastard, I'm guessing.
There'll be some weirdo out there.
3 hours of crying.
Fortunately, these professionally edited podcasts... sort of 40 minutes ish is a much, much healthier length.
Yeah,
for sure.
So very quickly, could you introduce yourself to sort of to us? Because I know of you, but we've never actually met in person.
No, we haven't. Well, it's lovely to meet both of you. I'm Rhiannon. I'm a comedy writer mainly, but I also do character comedy and stand up. I've done a lot of writing for BBC, places like that. But I'm also a member of the Dead Dad Club. That's my main accolade, I'd say.
That's number one.
Yeah.
First things first, Dead Dad Club member. Secondly, also a celebrated writer and comedian.
Oh, not celebrated.
Hey, listen, I've been celebrating it. I've been over here celebrating every time. Let's just get straight into it. What happened to your dad?
Well, he died.
Classic.
Yeah.
Classic.
That's the main thing, isn't it?
Sorry, you've probably heard that a million times before. So when I was 15, he suffered a pulmonary embolism and pretty much died of it. And so that happened...
Sorry, in the old Michael Scott Explain Like I'm Five, a pulmonary embolism?
Okay, yeah, sorry. it's a blood clot in the lungs. So initially it would have been he'd had a deep vein thrombosis before, which is like a blood clot in the legs. So initially it would have been one of those, but then it traveled up. A bit like how a stroke is like something in the brain, like a blood clot in the brain. Mm-hmm. This is a blood clot in the bit that makes you breathe. So a little bit tough to
more important.
Not ideal, certainly.
No, I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so.
So that was pretty out of the blue, I'd imagine.
Completely out of the blue.
So you just die, it happens and then you just die.
Well, I partly because I've never sort of like wanted to know whether he could have survived it. I've never looked it up to see if there are. I think pretty much they have to catch it. They have to sort of like do a little like an x-ray of your lungs and see, oh, that's not quite right. So
it's kind of a luck thing.
Yeah. I mean, it is a case of I'm not sure if like it's something that runs in the family, if we're like naturally clotty people. I was trying to do one of those at-home blood tests the other day, actually, and I really struggled to get enough blood out because it kept healing over. So I'm like, maybe I've just got super healing clotting blood, and that's a genetic thing. But
I do like the term clotty people.
That's clotty people.
We're just some very clotty people, I'm afraid.
I mean, some people, they've got thin. I'm sort of like talking like a medieval doctor, I guess. Some people have thin blood, but we've got thick blood.
Yeah. And
I'm sure it denotes personality. But yeah, it was just bad luck that he had just got back from trekking in Nepal. He really loved trekking and going on sort of adventurous holidays, and a combination of the fact of going on a really long haul flight, coming home, he was working from home at the time, which was pretty novel in the 2010s, but no longer, not getting up and sort of out enough, and kind of, because that's a way to sort of prevent clots is circulation.
Mm-hmm.
That's why whenever I go on planes, whenever I'm on a long car journey, gotta keep the legs moving, gotta keep the blood flowing. But yeah, just bad luck and very sudden. Like, he didn't really have any symptoms. He had a bit of a cough, but the post-mortem more or less said that wasn't related. So just bad luck, not really something that, unless the doctors had known to look for it, mm-hmm. could have been caught, which is a shame.
That's
sudden.
That's very, very tough. And so how did you find out? Were you there with him?
Oh, I was there.
Oh my God. Right. Talk us through this. This sounds awful.
Yeah. So I woke up that morning and I went downstairs to have some, I think it was Cheerios, because I haven't eaten them since. That would make sense if I've had a sort of like a mental thing about them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I was at home alone with him. And I went downstairs to have some Cheerios and I heard my dad shouting for me. And I went upstairs and found him basically on the floor, just like struggling to breathe. And I called the ambulance and they came and sort of put kind of those like heart monitor things on his chest.
Yeah.
I had to go get him a razor because he was a hairy man. just these little things you remember. Then he walked into the bathroom and I saw him collapse, and that was
it.
He died.
And it was just like that. Gone.
Yeah. And they sort of rushed, they closed the door behind them, they rushed in and kind of locked me out of the room. But being 15 and being sort of I think you have this feeling before something like this happens to you that nothing like this is ever going to happen to you.
Yeah.
So I just thought he'd collapsed and I thought he would be fine, because
you can't conceive of it, can you, at that age?
No.
It's not a thing happens.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys were the same, but I knew people whose parents had died, but I always thought, no, that won't happen to me, because I'm not one of those people who bad things like that happen to. And it is really such an extravagantly terrible thing that you're just like...
Yeah, it is. It's bizarre, isn't it? Because it is something that you don't... Well, I used to worry about it all the time, because there's so many stories and films and stuff in which children's parents die. I used to worry about it all the time, and then I got older and I stopped worrying about it, and then it happened. And part of me was like, it was the worrying. You should have kept worrying, and then he'd still be here. But man, that's brutal. You were there with him.
Aside from the ambulance people, the last person he was with, really. And that's hard. You know, the night before we'd gone for a curry, and we had a really sort of quite deep conversation about life and about different things. Like I said, I said that I wanted to do comedy, and I said that's what I wanted to do. Which is very precocious for a 15-year-old, because what do you have to to talk about when you're 15? And he provided me with the material.
He was like, hey, hold my beer, I will provide something.
Hold my cobra. but it was, I suppose, bittersweet in the sense that I got to have that really nice evening with my dad, and really sort of a really kind of nice moment, just the two of us. And then the next morning he died, and it's only in retrospect that you ascribe so much meaning to it, that you're like, maybe he knew, maybe when he said to me that night, like, oh, I want you to do whatever makes you happy, I want you to, you know, just follow your dreams. He might have been drunk, but you know, there's things that you kind of think, oh, maybe in the sort of the depths of his cells, they were like, oh, say these things now, Mick, like not later.
On some subconscious level, there was a part of him going, maybe let's wrap things up just in case. So what was he like?
He was very cool. He was he grew up in Wolverhampton, so that's where we were living at the time. We'd kind of moved around. I was born in London, and we moved to the States for his job. He worked in IT. He was like a great boss, apparently. A couple of years ago, I posted on Facebook asking like if anyone had any stories about my dad, and someone told this really lovely story about how when he got promoted to manager, he got this really big sort of corner office, and he was like, oh, this office is too big for me. So instead they started growing like chili plants in there. Like it became like a little office greenhouse instead, which I think just like sums up my dad. He really cared for people and really didn't ascribe to any kind of hierarchy or thinking that he was better than people. One thing was, he didn't like take anyone's bullshit. You know, he definitely could be a tough guy, and any of the times, any of the kind of the bad memories that I have of him are always sort of linked to times when he was kind of a straight shooter, and like whenever he thought I was like lying or not really trying my hardest with something, he could be quite harsh. But he was overall just a lovely guy. He had a lot of friends. Every year they still do a pub crawl in and around Leeds, where he went to university, to like commemorate him, which is just like really beautiful that he had this impact on so many different people's lives, and they loved him so much. I mean, he was he was definitely in a lot of ways my hero, and I think it was tough to lose him at that age, because as you get older, you sort of learn that your parents are flawed human beings a bit more. But it's hard to when you've kind of been conditioned by the fact of them not being there anymore, to think of them in the nicest like light, it's really hard to think of them as human beings who had flaws. So for a long time I struggled with that. My mum was like showing to me that she was a human being, and all the time I had like this perfect father in my head.
Of course
that's not true. Of course it's not true. As I said, he wasn't like perfect at all. But yeah.
But it is so true though. Like in real life, you know, when someone does something to annoy you, you know, you bitch about them.
Yeah.
You talk to your partner or your friends and say, oh, you know, really stupid thing my mum did. And my mum does get it in the neck from me.
Yeah.
Quite a bit. Sometimes, in fact, on this podcast.
Yeah, regularly.
For doing something stupid. But of course, once someone's died, they can't do anything stupid anymore. So
yeah, they all get they get, as you say.
Yeah, and you can't be angry with them for dying either. That's the thing. The most annoying thing that they've done is just die. But you can't be angry at them.
Oh, God, you can't.
Really.
No, none of them chose it. And even if they did, you can't. Sorry, that was quite. I said none of them chose it, and then I was like, now I'm shaming anyone who did make that choice. Which is tricky, tricky territory to suddenly wade into midway through, isn't it?
Title of the episode, maybe.
You can blame them.
Yeah.
That's what we should call it. Yeah,
yeah. You can blame them. I mean, even like my dad, obviously the risk factors for blood clots is like taking long flights and not sort of exercising mm-hmm. enough and sort of like getting your circulation going. There have been some people in my life that have kind of implied that, not that it was his fault, but like that, oh, well, that's something he did. You know, he knew what he was doing when he wasn't aware that he should have been looking out for DVTs at every moment of his life.
Yeah, like the rest of us are at all times, of course, constantly aware yeah. of how clotted
constantly.
Our blood is.
Yeah. And I mean, I imagine it's much the same if your parent dies of something like lung cancer and they've been a smoker, that
yeah.
you sort of, you talk to people and they're like, oh, well, that's kind of on them, right? And it just, yeah, that makes me really angry. Because like, at no point is anyone going through their life maybe some people are, but that's, what a terrible way to live, that you're constantly thinking, this could kill me. And if it does, it's my fault, you know?
Yeah. It's not really, cancer diagnosis is never really a told you so moment, is it? I don't think.
Yeah.
Someone gets lung cancer, you're like, well, I mean, we did say.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure we're not glamorizing smoking there. I think we're basically saying smoking will give you cancer, so we're fine.
Yeah.
I think we're square with that.
No, I'm not. In no way am I saying like.
I just want to make sure.
Just smoke as many cigars as you want. Absolutely. But you know, I guess yeah. Like everyone lives.
But we clipped that bit for the YouTube.
That's the bit we clipped.
Yeah.
Everyone lives their life with a certain element of risk, I think, is what I'm saying, and that no one ever expects it to be them who like gets the consequences.
Yeah. Exactly. It's like you were saying earlier that you don't expect it to happen to your parents. You also don't expect it to happen to you. You're like, if you are a smoker, you don't think, well, I'm going to be.
No.
I'm going to be the one.
That's going to be me with emphysema, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You think it'll be someone. You see the cigarette packets and you're like, yeah, but that's someone else's lungs. My lungs are fine. I'm breathing right now. Not a problem.
Yeah. I'm all good.
It's true of anything that kills you. There's, you know, I mean, not quite of anything that kills you. There's obviously, you know, freak accidents and incidents. But of many things that kill you that are diseases, there are presumably still some stop points. You know, my dad got cancer, but... you know, presumably, theoretically, maybe if he'd had an exam 6 months earlier or 3 months earlier or whatever the exact timing is, maybe that might have worked out. But I mean, the odds of that are just so
slim. Just feel like
we're
moving more towards, actually, you can blame them. As this conversation develops, we're getting more and more to like, well, actually, I suppose in that instance, it is a bit his fault.
Yeah.
I'm saying you can. What I'm saying is the problem with cancer, particularly prostate cancer, is that, you know, you're meant to have it checked. But how often are you meant to have your prostate checked? I think once a year, right? It's not once every 6 months. That's far too many prostate exams.
That's for enthusiasts only.
Yeah.
That's the people who are really
Your GP would be like, yeah, you've come in way too many times for this prostate exam.
Yeah. Can that cause cancer? Is that like a smoking thing where you keep smoking? Anyway, you know what I'm saying is that, you know, if you have it once every year, that's fine. But obviously, if you, the prostate cancer starts kind of like 6 months in, it's just unlucky.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, what, you know,
a month after you've just had your last prostate exam.
Yeah, like... exactly. Then unlucky, mate.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it reduces the chances, but it doesn't make them impossible. It's not.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying to everyone listening, look, you're just going to die. Well, no, actually, I am saying that. But
that is literally the tagline of the podcast. So we do want to remind people that this will happen to them. Not necessarily this, but something.
Can't blame them necessarily.
Yeah.
Although, Rich, the meningitis thing.
Yeah, which
your
which
dad died of meningitis.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Hard to blame him for that. I was trying to...
Could he really...
You're trying to blame him.
...hospital where they found out?
I think if he'd gone to hospital, so he was, just to catch Rhiannon up, he was fine one day, got ill in the night, thought he had the flu, turned out to be meningitis, but by the time he realised he was dead within minutes. I think if he had maybe the day before, when he felt like he might be coming down with a cold, if he'd then gone straight to the emergency room, then potentially, but it would have been a very weird reaction. For a man in his mid-50s getting a cold to be like, right, call an ambulance right now.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's much. I'm trying to think how we could blame him for it, and there will be a way. We'll find it. I don't know how he caught the meningitis. Perhaps that was.
Yeah. Do we? How did he catch it? I've never asked this.
That's the thing. We don't know. You can carry it for years, apparently, before it suddenly becomes active. Most likely, he was a doctor, so most likely he was treating a patient who had meningitis.
God.
He caught meningitis off the patient. Which again, hard to blame him for that. There's got to be a way.
Oh yeah, look at him doing his good deeds.
I know. What a
yeah,
dick.
Healing.
Yeah.
When I was in school, there was a poster in the medical room, the medicine room, when I was like six, which said like meningitis, rubber glass on it. And if you stand, you can get it from standing on rusty nails.
Oh, he used to do that all the time.
I was wondering if you're...
Yeah.
That was his other hobby, was treating people with meningitis and standing on rusty nails.
Yeah, his nickname was Rusty. Rusty John, people used to call him. Oh, I didn't realise that. Yeah.
It's all the rust he was getting involved in.
That's how he earned most... I mean, he did the doctor thing on the side, but his main living was walking on beds of rusty nails. He went town to town, and it's like a novelty travelling act. Well, there we go. That's why it's his fault.
No, now we can blame him, finally.
I hope so, Rhiannon, there's the podcast, Rhiannon. We have something terribly sad is said, and then we go, right, let's talk about rust.
Yeah.
That's the only way we'll get through.
It's pretty, yeah. Sorry, Rich, you were saying something about a rash.
One of the signs is a rash, but it was only, the only reason that we found out they had meningitis was that they did a post-mortem and the rash was internal. Which does make it hard to pick up. I mean, like, give him a chance.
That's bullshit.
That's ridiculous, isn't it? What are you supposed to do with that?
That's outrageous.
An internal rash? Where are you going to...
Yeah, I know. Like, you can't call that a symptom, I don't think. Look out for an internal rash. Do check your vital organs daily.
Yeah. Get someone to peer in with their x-ray specs. Well... That absolutely sucks. I'm so sorry.
I mean, it sucks in all cases, doesn't it? There's no good way.
It all sucks.
Yeah.
But it sounds like we had a similar... I mean, I was a fair bit older. I was 24 when my dad died. But it sounds like your dad was a very similarly sudden thing. So how was the aftermath when you're 15? Dealing with a loss like that must have been incredibly hard.
I don't really know how I did it. I remember how I... Because obviously, so we got taken to the hospital. I was taken in a separate ambulance. And I should have twigged. I should have thought, maybe there's a reason they're keeping me separated from my dad at this point.
Oh, my God. I've never even heard of that before.
Yeah. But, God, again, you look back and you think, oh, God, I was so stupid not to cotton on. But you have this sort of feeling of invincibility when you're that age. That, like, he is literally fine. So we got to the hospital and they still hadn't told me anything. I got taken to this room and I remember playing Doodle Jump on my dad's phone. And I was trying to keep my mum in contact, being that, oh, dad's been taken to hospital.
Yeah.
He wasn't breathing very well.
Were you still fairly sort of relaxed at this point? Not too worried or?
Not too worried. I think I was probably in sort of high alert, but... Mm-hmm. I was fairly relaxed in the sense that I thought he's going to be okay because all other people, aside from my grandmother, who was very elderly and was in hospital for a very long time, I'd never known someone to die suddenly. Yeah. So it felt like that's like death happens to people who have cancer for a long time or have an illness that, you know, slowly makes them worse and worse. Mm-hmm. And it didn't really occur to me that aside from being in a car accident or having a piano fall on your head, that an illness could just
come out of nowhere.
Suddenly do that to someone. Yeah. So I was quite relaxed. My mum was still in Scotland and it would have just taken her, and it did take her about 5 hours to drive back.
Oh, God.
My little brother didn't know anything. The only person who was in town was my grandma. So they called a taxi for my grandma to get her to come to the hospital. And then more or less moments after she'd arrived, the doctor came in and said, I'm sorry, he's dead.
Holy shit.
So, yeah. So I was sitting there with my gran and she sort of like grabbed me and held me, and mm-hmm. you know, we both like yeah. cried. And then we left the hospital, just came back to the house and waited for my mum to come home, waited for my brother to come back from his sleepover. And you know, the weird thing is, because like, I mean, obviously when I called my mum and said, I can't tell you what's happened, but you need to come home immediately. Yeah. She knew that yeah. he had died, but
yeah.
the doctors had still advised not to tell her, I suppose. Right. And I can't imagine that drive down. I can't imagine driving down the motorway on your own to get home and discover that your you know, partner of 20 odd years is dead, and you only just saw him the week before. But wow. slowly people coming in and finding out, and you know, like the week after I took off from school, and I remember thinking that was such a big deal, that it was like, wow, I took a whole week off school, and
yeah
you know, just wow. Yeah. I didn't do any of my work. I remember coming back to school in the January and doing a history exam that I'd missed, and only getting an A instead of an A star, and my teacher saying, Rhiannon, you know you can do better than this. So clearly I hadn't got around the school that my dad had died, but...
Oh, right. I was going to say.
Outrageous.
That would yeah. be incredibly harsh if you get an A in the immediate aftermath of your father's death, and she's like, come on, yeah. Rhiannon. Pull it together.
Come on.
You yeah. cannot let it affect your history GCSE.
Yeah.
What I really like about going back to school a week after your dad died is that you were just fine. For a week of grieving, and of course that's all you need. Straight back to school. Yeah, yeah, no yeah. problems. No problems at all. Get an A in my history.
It's not enough. I went
outrageous.
Yeah. Outrageous.
So how was going back to school? Because I always remember yeah. I mean, I'd long left school by the time my dad died, but I remember there being kids at school whose parents died, and it was sort of news went round, and then they'd come back, and you at that age you have no idea how to speak to somebody who's gone through something like that. So did everyone at school know what happened, or did you have to tell people?
So the day after, or it might have been the day of that he died, my friend, my best friend from school came round. You know, just got a lot of people just sort of popping around for a little bit, just mm-hmm. to, and it's all a blur, but I asked her to like tell people at school what had happened, so everyone knew. But I don't think I went to an all-girls school, so I imagine it was slightly more of a sort of, they were more sensitive than it they might have been otherwise. Yeah. I suppose yeah. I mean, girls can be horrible, like I've at the funeral, I remember them, this girl who I wasn't particularly close to, making fun of my tights. And I was like, my dad just died, and you're questioning my fashion choices.
But, at the funeral?
Yeah. But, you know, like...
Fucking hell.
So girls can be horrible, but like, I think I got off really lightly. I think they were really nice, and everyone was sort of, aside from that one history teacher, just very sweet. I had this one teacher whose husband had died, so she knew what it was like to have children who were bereaved, and she mm-hmm. was amazing. So shout out to Mrs. Valentini for being really nice to me.
That's lovely.
But it was Yeah, you do remember the people who are nice to you and the people who are horrible to you.
Yeah.
The best, I think.
That bitch with the tights comment. No, thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
Should we name her as well? Should we? Let's out her.
Oh, yeah. Should we get everyone named?
No.
It wasn't Valentini, was it?
It wasn't Valentini. Valentini is in my good books. Mm-hmm. No, I won't name and shame, partly because...
There's no reason to.
Yeah, there's no reason to. Yeah. What would I gain?
Insane thing to do. Yeah. That's so funny. I think I was quite lucky when my dad died. I think everyone was nice to me. Of course, I was a grown up and in an adult work environment full of adults. So, you know what I mean? Like, not when you're doing like a job just out of school, but like a sitting at a desk job.
Yeah.
So like everyone was just fine, really.
I still think people are a bit weird with it.
Definitely a bit weird, but no one was criticizing my choice of tights.
No, true.
No one was like, you look terrible today.
Yeah.
I remember having one quite good moment because my dad died before Christmas and then was back sort of early January. I didn't really take any time off because I just thought I'll just pretend it hasn't happened. Went back to the office.
Big man.
Yeah.
And I think I seemed mental. Because it was literally like 5 days later, I was just back in the office acting like nothing had happened because I didn't know how to tell people, but everyone knew.
Yeah.
And a woman that I used to work with came around the corner and said, oh, how was your Christmas? And I went, yeah, fine. And she went, oh, someone's a bit moody. And then walked into the kitchen, someone obviously told her, and then she came back out and was like, I am so sorry. And then gave me one of the longest, most uncomfortable hugs I've ever had in my life and then wandered off. And we never really spoke again after that. And that's not her fault, but it was an odd, it was a difficult moment for us all, really.
That's bleak. I'd never live that down. I'd move country if I was her. That's...
yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, you've got to think. She thinks of that.
Yeah,
she's trying to go to sleep
does.
And that pops in.
Oh, God, yeah, I imagine so. But she wasn't to know. Still was quite
it's
funny,
a nightmare.
Though.
Yeah.
The thing that I think if I had lost my dad when I was at school, I think I would have found it really, really hard. I think, and we had this, we recorded an episode with Philip Kostoletsky. I don't know if you know Phil.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, we were talking because he'd lost his dad at 16, so a similar age. And,
oh, I didn't know that.
And we were discussing, well, you know, whether it's harder to lose your dad when you're a bit older or when you're a bit younger. And Phil was like, when you're younger, 100%. And I agree. I think it must be harder when you're the age that you were. The only upside I can think of is at the age of 15, and I think it says a lot about me, but I think I would have really I'd have gone for as much sympathy as possible. I would have been using that excuse pretty heavily in the years that followed.
Extra time in your exams.
Yeah. Well, there was definitely the old extenuating circumstances card.
Lovely.
That was trotted out when I was applying to university. That was
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's in the personal statement, isn't it? Has to be.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. There's a little memo attached to all of my achievements that's like, oh, and by the way, she did all this when her dad had died. You know?
Like, that's rightly so. That's rightly so, because in another world, your dad would have helped you with your personal statement.
That's
know?
True.
So this is in lieu of that. This is just like, by the way, you know, dad can't help because death. so, you know, please read this as though it had gone through revisions from a parent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No?
Had he been around, he probably wouldn't have worded it because death, for instance.
Yeah.
It's one of the changes he would have made.
Editor's note.
Yeah.
No dad notes added. It's I guess it's true. I don't know whether I milked it. I think I did sometimes, like when I did something a bit shitty when I was a teenager, you know, a bit shitty to a friend, for example. I did always have that trump card of, well, I've gone through something that none of you have. So automatically my behavior is a little bit excused by that. But I don't think I did anything too bad. I never, you know, I never punched someone in the face. Like I never.
But you could have done. That's the thing.
I probably could have got away with that.
Yeah.
Maybe I should have tested the boundaries when I was that age. But I was always super well behaved at school. And that's partly why the, you know, A instead of an A star thing really. Yeah. It really got to me because I was like,
that was the worst thing you ever did.
Yeah, well exactly.
I think it speaks to your character. I would have milked it hard, shamelessly, and I think I would have then regretted it massively and felt bad about it. But I mean, you
probably would have acted the same way that you did when you were however old, 24, did you say?
24, yeah. I don't think podcasts were a thing then, but I have essentially milked it now. It's hard to argue I'm not milking it, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think you know, you would have gone back to school and pretended it hadn't happened, because you know that is sort of the standard. That is what happens, and I suppose it would have come out in different ways.
How much did it genuinely affect the next couple of years at school and your sort of adolescence?
It was, in some ways, it felt very normal, because it was like, okay, I'm going through all of the sort of the first, you know, my first boyfriend, going to like sixth form, going to university. It's like, I haven't experienced it with a parent, like with my dad. Mm-hmm. So I don't really have anything to compare it to. I think that's one of the advantages of losing a parent when you're younger, is that you have very sort of, you have all these sort of goals in place, and all of these kind of this framework of growing up and changing and where you ought to be. And that structure was very helpful for me, because it was only kind of when I finally got to university and was like, ah, shit, this is what I've been like aiming for, and this has been my goal, that I was like, oh, am I actually really desperately unhappy and haven't sort of resolved any of these emotions, and I've just been kind of putting them aside until I got my good A-level results? You know, you just, I mean, obviously it was hard. Like, I adore my mum, and she had a really, really tough time, and still does. I mean, everyone in my life who knew my dad still has a really tough time talking about him and what happened. And seeing the sadness of people around me is probably the thing that affected me the most when I was a teenager. But I would say it didn't really hit me properly until I went to university and finally didn't have those structured goalposts, you know, to sort of aim for.
Yeah, you no longer have sort of deadlines and things, and then...
Yeah.
It's also quite a significant life shake-up moment, isn't it? Like, it's you're going into a completely new environment, or a new thing is happening where you would really benefit from having someone to talk to about it. Yeah, I feel that. That's significant.
Yeah, it definitely felt like, because when I was at school, whether I sort of knew it or not, everyone kind of knew my story, and everyone, my story. sounds so lame, but like everyone knew about me. So when I got to university, it was suddenly like, oh, I have to tell all these people again what happened. And part of me relished that. Part of me was like, I have a dark backstory. But obviously part of me was like, well, this is hard, because I have to, I don't know whether there are things about me that I'm like this because of what happened to my dad, or I don't know whether this is just who I am. This is just my personality. This is, you know, nature versus nurture, like whether I would have ended up like this regardless. It's hard to know.
What did you study at university?
I did English. Okay. So, yeah, a lot of books.
I was just wondering if your dad dying had any impact on the career you ended up taking.
I think so. I think, as I was saying, like the conversation that we had the night before he died really sort of did have an impact on me, because the things he said then, that, you know, I should do whatever I kind of wanted to do and kind of follow my dream, which at the time was to do comedy, then I should just do it. And it also sort of instilled in me the feeling that I should do the thing that makes me happy, because my dad, he was very good at his job, but he was a bit of a workaholic. You know, I think that is possibly one of the reasons that he didn't sort of know, or he kind of underestimated what was wrong with him, or didn't kind of cotton onto it, because he was paying so much attention to his work. And your work isn't gonna be there after you die, you know, like he had a great life insurance policy, sure, that's awesome, but they come and they take away your laptop and you never hear from them again. That's what happens when if you die in the middle of having like a normal 9-to-5 job, then they might miss you, but they'll replace you, and they'll, they'll be pretty callous, because that is just, it's just business to them. Which is a shame, but it did instill in me the sense that like, I should do a career that really sort of does fulfill me.
And that has a sort of a measure of legacy attached to it as well.
That's
creating
true.
Something that exists forever, which is kind of the counterpoint to what your dad did.
Well, that's exactly true. And like he did do things, but they were to do with IT infrastructure, which is very important. He worked for one of the car rental companies setting up their IT infrastructure, and I'm sure that that's great. But there's not a lot of him left, I would say. There is no novel that he left behind. I also don't have all that many sort of pictures of him. I don't know. I can't remember what his voice sounded like. He was always the person behind the camera. And that's tough. And not something that most of us think about is leaving behind our sort of footprint. So I'm commending both of you for doing a podcast, because if and when, I don't know if you have kids already, but they'll always have hours of your voices to listen to.
Well, my thought is always that the podcast isn't really for us. It's more when we die, our children can continue the podcast, and it'll be about us dying doing this podcast.
Yeah.
And they'll get all the guests back or their children.
Yeah.
And that's my long-term plan.
Yeah.
I think, I'm not sure this one will ever be successful, but I think that one will really do.
Yeah. Our dad's died. Yeah. Dad's died.
Our dad's dad's died.
Our dad's dad's died.
Our dad's dad's died.
Yeah.
Our dad's died.
Yeah, it's gonna, it can never end. It never needs to end, because dads will always die.
Oh, it's yeah. our dad's died died. That's what it is. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good.
It's great. I think pitch it.
I'll be pitching it to my child from birth.
Yeah, yeah.
They'll the whole way through, they'll know this is their future. Dad, I don't want to be a podcaster.
Dad, I want to do another kind of podcast.
This is your future.
Yeah, and then on their podcast, they're always just bitching about like how you were a terrible parent because all you ever talked about was your podcast.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be a shared experience for many, many children in the future.
Another thing that I wanted to ask you about, because it's something that Tom and you have in common, is that you both got married last year.
Not to each other.
No.
Not
it's separate other. Weddings to separate people.
Joint weddings to separate people. No. I did get married. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Congrats to you, Tom. And it was fantastic. It was the easily the best day of my life. Just so much fun. It's just so much fun to have a day where all of your friends and family are there. So it's sort of like I didn't use my phone at all the whole day.
Nice.
Because everyone I could ever want to talk to was like in that marquee. So it was, it just felt fantastic.
Oh, that's lovely.
Did you have anything that was dad related?
Oh yeah, I made my husband dress up as my dad, and then and then I married him. we did have some stuff in, so obviously my husband and I we met at university, so he never knew my dad, which is a shame. I feel like I can't know for certain if they would have got on, but I feel like they would have, just because what I said in my vows actually was that my husband is a really good man, just like a genuinely good person, and he's one of the few like genuinely good people that I've met in my life, and one of them was my grandfather, who also sadly passed away, and my dad. So I definitely did feel like his sort of his presence there, and like that he sort of influenced a lot of it. And also we left a seat for him in the front row next to my mum, and he loved sunflowers. That was his favorite flower. And unfortunately they didn't fit with the sort of the scheme, the color scheme of the wedding, so they couldn't be in the sort of the general foliage, but we
they're
did
big.
Yeah. They are big. They do kind of take,
they are big.
Yeah. They're also very like, it might have se- like, if I had loads of sunflowers, it might have seemed like I was doing like a super pro Ukraine wedding, and like I am pro Ukraine, but like not to the extent of making my whole wedding pro Ukraine.
It's also got a kind of a harvest festival vibe to it.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
When you're at
That's
school,
true. Yeah,
you know, people would be bringing cans of baked beans in, which is not what you're going for.
Yeah, and a shopping trolley. My mum walked down the aisle holding a sunflower and then put it on the seat as a nice sort of memory of him. And then also my mum, in her speech, made me absolutely cry, and everybody else who knew my dad, like, just weep, because I don't think she realized how emotional it would be. But she said that when I was born, one of the sort of the first few days after that, my dad said to her, "Oh, I have a daughter. Now I get to make a speech, like, oh, at a wedding." Imagine you're sitting there at your wedding, and then your mum drops that bombshell. That you know, I howled.
Well, yeah.
I was like,
rightly
Jesus
so.
That's the saddest thing I've ever heard. But also, yeah. So he was definitely like there in so much of the wedding, which felt really good and cathartic almost. You feel like a sort of an issue with someone dying is they're not really present in the world or in they're not present in the world.
That's a very good way of summing it up.
It's one of the main things they do.
And you just want to kind of like have little reminders of them, and you almost want the funeral to have taken place later than it did. You know, they can't hold off on he was cremated for, you know, 10 years, but like you do want a sort of a bit more time to process how you feel about that person and have the opportunity to talk about them a bit later. So getting married did feel like a good opportunity to bring him up again.
Well, I mean, we've on this podcast before championed the idea of the re-wake, where I mean, I think, Tom, at one point you wanted to have one annually, just have another wake every single year, because you don't really, the first one, you're reeling. You don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
You just sort of have to throw up.
It's
someone that you love has died suddenly, and then everyone goes, "So when's the party?" And you have to plan a party within a week. The party happens, and then everyone goes away and you get on with your life, and it would be good. And a wedding's a perfect opportunity to do that a few years later.
The wake is the wrong time for things. People have to do the thing then, because it's the only time. My dad was in amateur dramatics, so a bunch of people from the amateur dramatic societies he was in did a couple of songs at his wake, which obviously is a fitting tribute. But at the same time, a wake is not the right time for the Chattanooga Choo Choo. I've always said that.
Yeah, and you were saying that beforehand as well.
But if you had a re-wake, then choo-choo.
Oh, Chattanooga choo-choo. I only know that song from Black Books.
I know. It's not the song that they did. I don't remember. There was three songs. But I couldn't tell you. Yeah, I was just all over the place. I'm not possibly able to remember that sort of detail.
You couldn't appreciate the amateur dramatics, and that's the real shame, I think.
I was annoyed by it. I've said that on this podcast before. I stand by it. It was annoying. It was like, this isn't what I want to happen right now. But for you guys, it's how you deal with it, so it's good. But for me personally, and he was my dad, not yours.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think this is appropriate.
I think that's fair enough. I think you should have right of veto to the way other 100%. People mourn sometimes.
Yeah,
very happy for them to mourn in the way that is, you know, most comforting.
Yeah, but I mean, they don't have to inflict it on you. They could have like gone off round the back and quickly done a Chattanooga choo-choo on their own, just to get it out of their system, and then come back to the church. Yeah. That's
guys,
fine.
Come on, guys. Round the bike sheds. We're doing a Chattanooga at the bike sheds.
Yeah. Yeah. Did they? I don't know the Chattanooga choo-choo, but it sounds quite an upbeat song. It's not a funeral vibe. Did they perform it with sort of a knowing, somber air? Or?
So again, it wasn't that song.
They did
like three songs. I don't remember what they did, but it was that sense of upbeat, as it is at a wake, I suppose. Everyone's happy and having a lovely party, which is, you know, in my mind, inappropriate.
I'll take issue with the words "everyone's happy." I think that's maybe misleading.
Maybe that's wrong, but everyone's pretending to be happy smiling and laughing, which is again fine if that's how you grieve. But I don't think that's what I needed at that time.
Fair enough. Yeah,
but in a re-wake situation,
it's perfect.
We're laughing. And we could have sunflowers everywhere and it'd be fine.
Oh, it's true. Yeah. I think, I mean, as I mentioned, my dad's friends do this pub crawl, which I must go along to at some point. But obviously I was 15 when they started it, so it would have been slightly inappropriate. But I do think that's a great thing, because it is very hard to really appreciate the kind of the memories of the person and kind of the sort of all the people around you and their memories of a person straight after the funeral. I also barely remember the wake, except I think the tights comment was at the wake, not the funeral. That sucks that that's the only thing I remember about my dad's wake.
How emotional was the day? Because you mentioned you did a speech there. Did you manage to get through it sans tears?
At the wedding?
Yeah.
So I did cry during the vows. It's so like intense being sort of up there, like committing yourself to someone, that I couldn't really tell what I was crying about. But my husband also cried, so I think it was partly that. I've never really seen him cry, and he said before the wedding that he wasn't going to cry, so I was like, yeah, gotcha. But yeah, it's definitely an emotional thing, getting married and feeling like there's someone who should be there. And my mom was fantastic during the whole planning process, and she definitely went above and beyond in terms of all the help that she gave us, but it would have been so much easier for her if he'd been there to sort of share the load, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Because my partner's parents are both still around, and you know, now being married, I can really appreciate how shit it must be to not have your partner there when your child is getting married, and all these things are happening, all these life events that you expected to go through with that person there, you know. It's a hard thing, but you need to balance that, of course, with the fact that it's also the happiest day of your life, you know, that you are marrying someone you love.
We know where your dad wasn't. But I would be interested in finding out where your dad is, as we do a feature we like to call "Where's Your Dad?" My dad, Rich's dad, is in the ground.
He's buried. Yes.
Okay.
My dad is in my stepmom's living room, and partly, and some say partly in the confines of a zoo, but that wouldn't be legal, so he isn't.
Okay.
And so where's your dad?
My dad is mainly in, I think, my mum's room at home, but he has been lots of places. So
Oh, yeah.
he was cremated.
Oh.
He has been scattered many a place. So
Interesting.
we lived in America for a little bit, I think I mentioned, but we went there quite soon after he died as like a sort of on our grief tour. We went on a lot of holidays and
Sure.
we scattered him,
Grief Tour of America.
yeah, grief tour of America. We scattered him in New Zealand. I think we must have scattered him in Japan, in Mallorca. So he's definitely he's been about, and I think that is kind of what he would have wanted. I mean, I doubt he'd want for the most part to just be like on a shelf in my mum's room, but we're getting there in terms of like scattering him. But no, he's not, he's we don't have a what do you call him, tombstone, or like a place where he mainly is. We're just slowly scattering him.
Nice.
That's really interesting. I don't think we've spoken to someone before who has tried to distribute as far and wide as possible, seemingly. That's quite so why though? What was the decision that made you think, yeah, he's got to go in as many places as we can sort of think of?
Well, he loved traveling. I mean, to his detriment, but he loved traveling, you know. He went to Nepal, he went to Bhutan, he went to India, he went to lots of places in the States, in South America, did all of kind of like Indonesia and Thailand and Australia, and my parents canoed down the Zambezi before
Wow.
I was born. Like all these,
My goodness.
they were of the generation where it was very much sort of like not cheap to travel, but cheaper, and also, you know, like university educated, had reasonably good jobs, so could kind of like could travel.
Houses were cheaper, world economy was doing better. Yeah, sort of thing, yeah.
He was very sort of adventurous. He also spoke fluent French and lived in Belgium for years, and
Oh my God.
he, yeah yeah
Yeah.
there's things I forget about him that are just like super cool. But yeah, he was a very well-traveled person, and it makes a lot of sense for him to be still traveling now, I guess.
Well, whereabouts in Belgium do you live?
Oh, he lived in
Is it
Brussels. He worked for I think he well this was back when we were in the EU, of course, but I think he worked for DEFRA for a while, and for like the European agricultural
All
thing. He had
right.
lots of different jobs.
Does he like it?
Oh,
Like in Belgium.
I think he liked Belgium. He did live there for quite a while.
I mean, the obvious next question is, have you thought about putting some of him in Belgium?
I'm sure. I think we would perhaps struggle to know where to put him in Belgium, because it's unless you're very subtle, it's quite hard to scatter someone in like a public place, I suppose. So normally
Yeah.
where we've scattered him has been in sort of like nature. So I think possibly if we went to like a, I don't know, like a waffle cart, and we're like, pouring him out. So I'd have to think about it. But I'm sure he'd love to be back in Belgium. And he lived for a while in Mâcon in France, you know, where Mâcon Village, the wine comes from. So maybe we'll scatter him in a vineyard, then someone could drink him
Oh yeah.
and take
Hey.
in his powers,
They
his ashy powers.
have a glass of wine and they suddenly think, I'm suddenly very good at infrastructure. And then
Oh man, what an episode. My God, what an episode. I just listened back to that this morning, actually. Rich edited this one, so it's the first opportunity I had to listen back to this episode. And I laughed out loud several times. I'm really surprised by how much fun we had, considering some parts of the stuff we were talking about was pretty full on. I have been reflecting on Can You Blame Him? and I'm wondering if I might have been a little bit too harsh in the moment. But also, I don't know, maybe you can blame them. Maybe you can a bit. Wasn't joking about my children carrying on the legacy of the podcast when I eventually have them. And I just wanted to thank you very much for listening to this week's episode. If you laughed, like if you found it funny and you laughed out loud, could you do us a favour, please? Pop onto iTunes or Apple Podcasts, as it is known now. iTunes isn't really a thing anymore, is it? I'm a tech journalist. I should know. Go onto Apple Podcasts on your phone and can you just give it 5 stars, please? Really, really will help the podcast grow. If you laughed and you really enjoyed it, actually, you know, you can do more than just a 5-star on iTunes, Apple Podcasts. You could tell a friend, because if you tell a friend, they might listen to it, and they might tell a friend. 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 I was going to fade this out, but I realised I can't because I haven't done the outro. Death comes for us all, but Mon and me, it comes to you first. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.